Welcome to the FF Faceoff, where fantasy football is debated. Here are your hosts from the East Coast, who've never heard a bet they didn't like, Michael Hoff and Anthony Servino.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wednesday afternoon, early evening, and you know what that means. It means the real NFL guru, Anthony Servino, and Jim Coventry at Jim Coventry NFL are going to partner up the FF Faceoff and RotoWire and get things rolling, all things NFL and fantasy football. But today, we're going to finish off the NFC North and see what we can get through for the NFC South. That said, Mr. Servino, how are you today?
Well, Jim, we spoke off air, going through some life bumps, but really, really happy to be back after a couple of days off.
You know what? Sometimes getting back in the fray, normalcy, is the best way to get rolling. We got to move. We got to move. Because if we stagnate, we just kind of dwell in it, sit down. So I'm glad you're here. We're going to move headed north, which means the Green Bay Packers. So, first thing, it is so tough to talk about the Packers this year because we don't know what's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers. And I know we've talked about this, and we won't spend a lot of time talking about Aaron Rodgers, but I think the first thing, the main question, Anthony, is what odds are you putting on Aaron Rodgers being the starting quarterback for the Packers for either some, part, or all of the season?
Dwindling. They are dwindling. And sure, you know, we've had a conversation on this show. I've had a conversation on another show. Well, it's like, well, is Aaron Rodgers the competitor? Can we really see him sitting out? And that swayed me a little bit. But then I think about Aaron Rodgers, the person. And Aaron Rodgers, the person, he's very complex. He doesn't really need the money. He has a nice contract with Jeopardy, working, you know, what, 90 days out of the year if he really wants it. And I think he's very ego-driven. And I'm an Aaron Rodgers guy, a big-time Aaron Rodgers guy. But I can certainly see him, if they don't trade him, could I see him pulling a Melvin Gordon and sitting out a couple of games? And it, what is that, the accrued free agency? Absolutely. Because You know, like think about this. He sits out September, four games. They go 0-4. What a boost it would be for Aaron Rodgers to be the knight in shining armor for that ego, and then they roll to, you know, 11 wins. Like, I mean, I could see it.
As much as I like that comment, this isn't about money. Holdouts are about money. Aaron Rodgers, while
and Jim is going in and out here. And what I think he's trying to explain, here he is, Jim's back.
Yeah, so he cut with Jake Kumerow, and apparently that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Drafting Jordan Love was probably part of it, not adding wide receivers, cutting his boy, so to speak. And now all of a sudden, Aaron Rodgers is personal. And you said it in a way, this is a different cat. He is played most of a career. He's 37. Long, storied career. Doesn't need the money. Is the competition driving him? You may have mentioned this. Doesn't seem like that kind of guy. He'll compete if that's what he needs to do, but he'll do something else if that's what life, you know, leads him down the path of. I think that unless he's gone, I think it's a super
Jim is cutting in and out again. We're having some audio issues on one of these ends. And we're back.
Okay, I don't know. There's been a recurring problem today. All right, so do we frame this as if Rodgers is with the Packers or Rodgers is not with the Packers? How would you like to frame this discussion?
Let's go if he's with Green Bay.
Okay, so The coaching staff is outstanding. Matt LaFleur, since coming over, he completely understands the analytics. He used the fifth most pre-snap motion, the seventh most play action. Therefore, he forced defenses to commit and dictate personnel. It gave Rodgers excellent pre-snap reads. That was amazing. Now, they also, you would think of the Packers as an 11 personnel team, but they don't have receivers. So they were the eighth fewest in 11 personnel, but they were top four in 21, two running backs and a tight end, and top 11 in 12 personnel, one running back, two tight ends. I flipped that around. Anyway, they were real heavy personnel, which allowed them to force defenses in the base, and it allowed Rodgers to have his best season in many years. So that said, the receiving group, and we'll get to this in a second, all they added was Amari Rodgers, pick 85, I believe. Well, he's sub 45th percentile in speed, agility, and explosiveness. I don't know what they have. So what are your thoughts on Rodgers as a passer with this great system, but with Davante Adams and moving parts?
Listen, we know what Aaron Rodgers can do. We saw him have an MVP-type year, or he was the MVP last year. Back-to-back years in this system with NFC Championship. You know, they were bounced out, but they still made it. I mean, even though they only added Amari Rodgers, they are going to get Devin Funchess back. I know Devin Funchess is a laughing stock in the fantasy football community, but he's a big-bodied receiver. He's almost like a tight end in the red zone. So I do think if healthy, Devin Funchess could help this offense out, and there's enough pieces there. The big part was retaining Aaron Jones because of his versatility in this offense. So I'm in on Aaron Rodgers. Because of quarterback at the competition, or because of the competition at the quarterback position, I don't think I could put Aaron Rodgers in my top five, because there's way too many guys I can make a case inside that top five to be the overall QB1.
Absolutely correct. Now, not only do we mention earlier, the play calling and the personnel groupings by Matt LaFleur were pristine to give Rodgers, again, clear reads of the defense and usually light secondaries. But also, according to Sports Info Solutions, they were at least 82nd percentile at all offensive positions. They were 82nd percentile at tight end, 85th at quarterback, 85th on the offensive line, and 88th at receiver. But that's not it. 95th percentile at running back with Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones. They had stellar play by every level of the offense. And the offensive line, I know they lost Corey Linsley, and they're going to add Josh Myers in. Overall, should still be a good line. So I don't think there, as you're saying, there's not a lot of regression coming here. It was a gelled unit that's capitalizing on a synergy between the coaching and the personnel. Other thoughts?
Are we still on Rodgers or the team overall?
The passing attack overall, just the overall passing attack.
You know, the one concern I have in the passing attack, it comes from Robert Tonyan. And I feel like with a guy like Robert Tonyan, we're betting on efficiency. And the player that comes up is Mark Andrews 2 years ago. Mark Andrews, double-digit touchdowns, not a lot of targets. The ATP shoots up. He was a tight end three, I believe, or three or four the following year, and he didn't return that value. And I'm afraid Robert Tonyan is down that same road. Is he going to get enough targets? Because we certainly know, can we depend on 11 touchdowns again this year? On what, 50 targets, whatever he had, 50, 60 targets? It wasn't much.
Are we back?
Yes.
All right. Sorry, guys. We'll have this problem today. Sorry, guys. So, all right. So as we look back at this now, Davante Adams, look, we'll have this discussion if Rodgers is being there, but fantasy managers right now, some people are drafting. Where do you draft Davante Adams if you are in a draft today?
You know, we had this discussion following one of your SiriusXM drafts, and Davante Adams, according to you, was falling to the back of the first, early second round. And if I'm drafting right now, unless I firmly believe or had inside information that Aaron Rodgers is 100% going to be in Green Bay, I cannot draft Devontae Adams at his normal middling first round ADP. I just simply can't do it. Because as you stated, Devontae Adams without Aaron Rodgers is probably pedestrian. Because what does he do really well? Look at the workout metrics.
Absolutely correct. Yes. So the thing, and I know we had mentioned this in a prior show, it's the chemistry between the two. The fact that Aaron Rodgers will throw the ball before Adams is out of his break, knowing he's going to be in that break. And Rodgers will make ridiculous throws like on his hip. He'll throw it on Adam's hip, knowing Adam's going to look for the ball there, and it like goes through three defenders, and it's right there. So you are absolutely correct. He doesn't always get a lot of separation, and sometimes he's able to. He is a good route runner, but I wouldn't say he's the king of separation. And so you're right. Another quarterback's not going to pull the trigger on a lot of those throws, so it's problematic. I will say this. If somebody is playing in a tournament, a jackpot league, and if he falls to the end of the first or early second, and you want to take a risky move early to try to move ahead of the field, well, at the turn, if Rodgers is there, Adams is there, that may be a move designed to take down a tournament when you know you could get very little out of him. But in a standard league, I think I'm with Anthony completely on this. I think there's not really a spot I'm comfortable because he is going to go in the top 17 picks for sure.
Yeah, I like that you brought the tournament part up. If you're in the underdog fantasy best ball tournament, if you can get Aaron Rodgers at that turn, Devontae Adams at that turn, it could potentially be a league winner.
And so adding to that, because people are dropping the ADP of Aaron Rodgers because of the uncertainty, people are talking about making a sneaky Broncos stack with Aaron Rodgers, assuming he's there, and the Broncos pieces. But how about a stack of Packers with Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers? So you'll Adams, and then, you know, like I said, Aaron Rodgers is falling a bit. You can probably get him as QB8 or so, add him, and obviously Tunyon's ADP is falling as well because of the uncertainty. So that's not a bad sneaky stack to go with. Aaron Jones wouldn't probably be a part. Well, you actually, if you really wanted to go crazy, now I don't know how big of an offense you think the Packers are going to have, but it would be potentially possible to get Adams at the turn, near the turn, and then Aaron Jones in the second round. You could pile up Packers if you thought that was reasonable. I don't know how explosive the offense would be, but it would be something that fantasy managers could try.
Why is Aaron Jones perennially disrespected?
He shouldn't be, but if you're stacking, I think if you're going to get the maximum usage of the passing game, I think first and second round picks on a running back and a receiver, it seems a bit counterintuitive. If you were on a team with a heavy passing attack and you were stacking for a tournament and you took one player in the first round, I don't think you'd want to spend the next player's draft capital to the third or fourth round. That's all. I love Aaron Rodgers, and I think he's an outstanding fantasy, you know, commodity to have. And I think in the second round ADP, I think he's a great selection. But I think you're just kind of mentioning tournaments where, you know, I get first, second round, same team. That's a little bit sketchy.
We need to have a tournament type of show once we finish these previews.
We do, which is going to get us back on focus point here. So I'm glad you said that. So we will have a show on that. So what are your thoughts on Alan Lazard, who last year, look, he had that core injury. He wasn't quite himself. He doesn't see a ton of targets, but he did show some good efficiency and chemistry at Rodgers. Assuming Rodgers plays, what are you thinking about Alan Lazard this year?
You know, considering the potential Devin Funchess addition, he opted out with COVID last year. We have Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who I believe led all wide receivers in a deep ball category. You mentioned Lazard. There's Amari Rodgers. There's a lot of competition here. I don't know how much stock I'm going to have in Alan Lazard.
I would tend to agree to that because his targets have been very up and down as it has been. And you're right. If there are more players in the equation, he's not a player that commands the ball. There are inconsistencies in his game. And so he only would be, again, a tournament type play because he could have those boom weeks. But I don't think in redraft single season, like set your lineup each week leagues, I don't think I want much to do with him at all. So I like your point on that. And then you did mention Tonyan earlier. Where would you evaluate him in season long leagues?
And season long, considering the tight end position, if I'm going to, unless I'm getting like one of the top tight ends, I am usually waiting and drafting two later. And can, where Tonyan can potentially go, he's not a guy I'm going to have a lot of stock in.
I'm feeling the same way. I've moved him near 20 a tight end, which means, you know, even in two tight end league, it's dicey as whether I go with him as a second tight end. And so, yeah, I'm kind of off him. He's, you mentioned earlier, the efficiency has to be there. He's very touchdown dependent. He did have a number of four catch games. So, I mean, that was good at the tight end position. But as you mentioned, with other players coming in, Funch is coming back, as you said, realistically, yeah, I don't think he's going to get the volume to do well. Amari Rodgers could be involved. Again, I don't like his metrics, but yeah, I think that Tonyan, that might be hard to repeat that season. I like that Mark Andrews analogy you used earlier. So overall, we didn't talk much about Aaron Jones. Are there any comments? We did kind of say where I would draft him. Did you have any other comments about Aaron Jones for this year?
I like Aaron Jones a lot. And if he's there in the second round, even if I go running back in the first, I like doubling down on running backs. I'm all over Aaron Jones, especially in the second. But on that note, before we move off of the topic, on Marquez Valdes-Scantling, number one in yards per reception, number six in yards per target, and number 12 in deep balls. So he's that big play guy. Not a lot of redraft value for me. But again, if we're talking tournament play and best ball, I love MBS.
Back. Did you finish your thought on Jones as I dropped again?
Yes.
Okay, and I didn't hear that because I was dropped, so we'll figure this out. Aaron Jones is a very strong choice, as we mentioned earlier, and there's no reason to downgrade him greatly. Now, if we get closer to the season, and if Aaron Rodgers is out of the picture, I will be a complete fade on Aaron Jones, and here's why. Jordan Love at quarterback will force teams to play stacked boxes and force him to beat him with his arm because they know he can't. They legitimately could see cover zero in nine-man boxes if Aaron Jones is in. And Aaron Rodgers is outstanding in the screen game, and I don't know if we'll get that from Jordan Love. And therefore, if Rodgers is out, I think not because of talent, but because of the insane amount of bodies in the box that he'll see, I think Aaron Jones would become very problematic there. And any thoughts on that before we move to the Vikings?
No, I mean, if it's anybody but Aaron Rodgers as Green Bay's quarterback, I am going to severely discount almost every piece of this offense.
100% on that. I think that's probably, with the uncertainty of Green Bay, this was never going to be a smooth team recap. So let's go to one that is much more stable. We'll go to the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, last year overall, their offensive line, I want to point this out, they graded 35th percentile by Sports Info Solutions. However, the Gary Kubiak system, which will now be carried on by Clint Kubiak, little nepotism going on. Imagine that in the league, right? And so the same system will run. But even with subpar offensive line play, Dalvin Cook was able to have an enormously productive season. It stems from Shanahan. The Shanahan system goes to Kubiak, and they are going to continue to run this. And we know that they are going to give good looks to their quarterback. Now, they were top 10 and 12 personnel. They ran the 10th most. And then at 21 personnel, they were the third most. So they run a ton of heavy sets, and they ran the least 11 personnel, the fewest three receiver sets in the league. We're going to continue to see that this year. And they added Christian Darrisaw, a very, very talented offensive tackle, to their line, which will certainly help. Let's start with the run game before we talk about Kirk Cousins and the passing attack. So with the coaching system they use, the ability of adding the tackle, what are your thoughts on one Dalvin Cook this season?
Dalvin Cook, I'm seeing him drafted as soon, you know, as ahead of Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley. And I think there's a legitimate case for it. Last year finishes number two in fantasy points per game in 14 games. He also popped in 2019, finished number two again in fantasy points per game. So we know Dalvin Cook can get the job done. The issue is health. Well, Dalvin Cook, sure, he's going to miss a handful of games. Anybody can. He's plagued with this injury stigma that I think is unfair right now. And if you're not drafting Dalvin Cook because you fear a long-term injury, I think you're missing out on a potential overall RB1 this season, especially with the way the Minnesota Vikings utilize him. They use him as a receiver as well as a runner. He's explosive. He gets touches. And last year, number one in red zone touches with 66.
It was absolutely insane, the great workload and the great production that he had. And I have him number two on my board overall. I have McCaffrey ahead of him. I almost view last year as a positive for McCaffrey because, and I know he was hurt, but he didn't take a pounding last year because he was not on the field. And I think he comes back fresher this season. And so I think we see the Christian McCaffrey that we had seen all along, but it's very close. And I can't fault somebody for taking Dalvin Cook over McCaffrey. But again, for me, it's number two, and that's not a bad place to be. And as you said, they use him in all facets of the offense. You mentioned the red zone. They use him in the passing game. And so it is a full three-down role. And Alexander Mattison, we saw last year, is nothing more than just background noise. He is not a factor in this offense. And that is a good thing because we were worried 2 years ago that he was going to be a factor because he was, but that went away. So there's no real questions here from either of us about Dalvin Cook. Now the passing game. I think that as much as we like the Kubiak system, be Clint again this season running it, the thing that doesn't help Kirk Cousins, that despite all the heavy personnel groupings, they only ran the 16th most pre-snap motion, and they ran the 11th, you know, fewest play action. And they needed to use that more to give Kirk Cousins better look. Now, he benefited because Justin Jefferson simply cannot be covered. Second half of the season, when teams rolled coverage to him, they had no answer ever at any point. Now, Adam Thielen across the way, he was dinged up a bit, wasn't at his absolute best. He's had a healthy offseason. I don't think he's over the hill yet. Before we go into the entirety of the passing attack, what are your thoughts on Kirk Cousins first?
As far as a fantasy quarterback, we know what Kirk Cousins did in Washington. We know what he did, I believe, in year one or two with the Minnesota Vikings. But what we also know, if Dalvin Cook is healthy and going, we're not going to get that Kirk Cousins who's going to bring that top five quarterback ceiling like we saw in Washington and like we saw a few years ago when Dalvin Cook was hurt. So Kirk Cousins is severely dependent on Dalvin Cook's health. I like Kirk Cousins a lot in Superflex as a number two quarterback, but in one quarterback redraft leagues, I don't think you're drafting Kirk Cousins.
No, and we will go back to a discussion from before. Not a bad tournament option, though, because of the spike weeks. When the defense is really bad, when they have to throw, Cousins can have those four touchdown weeks. Those are not out of the realm. But as you said, I agree with you completely. In a standard redraft, set your lineup each week league, not really going to sign him because I don't think I could confidently start him in any week and say this is the week. So overall, I think, again, more of a tournament play. Now we get to the receivers. Hey, basic question. Will Justin Jefferson repeat his dominance of his rookie year?
Here's where I'm going to go here. And we can rope Kirk Cousins into this too. We can rope this whole passing attack. Last year was probably the worst Mike Zimmer defense I've ever seen, dating back to his days as Dallas and Cincinnati. That defense is going to be better this year. Maybe not top 10, but it's going to be a lot better than it was last year, which means we might not see this team trailing as much, and that does hurt the passing attack overall. So can Justin Jefferson do it? He has the pop, he has the sizzle, he can do it all. But I do think asking for another 1,400-yard season in year two, that might be a lot to ask for.
You know, that's a great point about the defense. I know Patrick Peterson is probably close to the end of the line, but they bring him in. Cam Dantzler, he made improvements as the season went on. They did draft Jeff Gladney with a first-round pick, so they have three corners with either draft capital or, as Patrick Peterson, he's done it before. And if the coaches, especially Mike Zimmer, there's one thing he does well. He coaches those corners up and gets improvement out of them. So that would be their strength. Now, they're not going to get much of a pass rusher. They still have Danielle Hunter, but basically Michael Pierce and Dalvin Tomlinson are more run stuffers, which in this day and age, not really conducive to what, you know, teams are going to throw at them. And they have a guy named DJ Wonnum across the end out from Hunter. Now, I honestly don't even know who that is. And so their linebacking crew is aging. Eric Kendricks is still an outstanding player. So I do think that you are correct. They will be able to slow teams down a bit more. So I think you're pointing out that Cousins isn't going to see a lot of these 35 attempt games. Where does that put you overall on Jefferson, though?
Listen, I'm still going to aggressively draft Justin Jefferson. However, am I going to be a little bit more higher on him in these tournament plays we keep bringing up? Absolutely, because we've seen a lot of these big-time pop games out of him. But we also saw a few duds, and when I'm in a redraft league, I rather have consistency over boom-bust upside.
Yeah, that's a great point. Now, I do note, and again, the defense will be different this year. Their defense was improving in the second half. They got significantly better because they were one of all-time bad defenses to start the year. And Jefferson was seeing double-digit targets in most of the games from week 11 on. That was very encouraging. And I know that Adam Thielen was dinged up a bit, and that could have had something to do with it. But I almost wonder, the coaching staff has to see that teams cannot cover Jefferson. Forcing him the ball is not a bad thing. And they're going to throw 25 times a game. They're going to throw at least that low amount. And 10 targets would be 40% target share. That'd be a bit high. So that gives us some concerns. But as you said, aggressively drafting him. I have him as my wide receiver 5. Comfortable with that. But there is some room for concern, as you're mentioning, because if the defense is a lot better, you're right. The volume could go down and you could be left with a middling low-end wide receiver one as opposed to an elite one that you may have to pay up for.
Justin Jefferson played in 16 games last year. In PPR formats, he either got you 14 plus or he got you fewer than 9 in 6.
Now, when I was researching during the season, in most of those games, if I remember, I don't have the screen up, you probably do, it was tied to targets. In a lot of those games where he underperformed, the targets were, and I don't remember the exact number. It was like, I want to say off the top of my head, 5 or less. In the games he was blowing up, he was getting targeted. And then as the season went on, but you are right, that was the knock early. And so as we were setting our DFS lineups those mostly DFS lineups, we were trying to figure out, is this going to be a target week or not? And I think it was against Carolina was the one week where he did get targets and didn't produce. But most of the time, and if you have that sheet, the game log in front of you, did it line up with targets?
Well, it absolutely does. And it wasn't Carolina. He actually got 13 targets and went for 26 against Carolina. It was against Tampa. And it was the only week where he had more than 5 targets and single-digit fantasy points. He finished with 7.9, but he only had one game where he had fewer than 5 and double digits.
Yes. So I like that. A nice addition to that. So overall, wheels up. There is some concern, but definitely nothing to shy away from. He's going to have a good season. He looks like he's an elite player. What about Thielen? Do you have any other interest in Adam Thielen?
Adam Thielen, at this point, he's a value. This was a guy usually drafted higher. Now we see the emergence of Justin Jefferson, and we see the fantasy football community kind of a little bit shy on Adam Thielen. Now, he was banged up last year, only missed one game, even 2019, missed 6 games. But he was still, last season, number 3 in red zone targets, number 3 in total touchdowns with 14. So can we get another 4? It's almost like not quite at Robert Tonyan at the wide receiver position, but I do think he's a little bit more touchdown dependent than usual.
It was crazy to see that, you know, this little guy is a big red zone factor, but his footwork is pristine. And when he runs patterns along the edges of the end zone, he is outstanding at the contested catch and getting the feet in. And I know guys are great at getting their feet in, but he's kind of a master along the end zone line at that. And I think Kirk Cousins has had a strong affinity for getting the ball to him because of that trust factor that's there. So that gives him great opportunity. It's just hopeful that this year there for Thielen, they keep up throwing some in the red zone because it could be all going to Dalvin Cook. So there's a bit of concern, and age is a bit of a concern. Thielen, the injuries, were the injuries due to the crazy COVID season and lack of continuity, or is age starting to catch up with him? And that's the thing that's a little bit of a concern. I do worry that a guy that, you know, has lived on finesse may not age extremely well. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, he's entering, I believe, his age 31 season. He's going to be 31 in August. So there could be a regression, but we also see receivers play well, you know, into their age 35 season. In a case of Adam Thielen, now that Justin Jefferson, I'm going to say it, he's going to command the best coverage on the field. He'll probably command that double team more times than not. I like Adam Thielen, especially at where you can get him. And it looks like his underdog ADP is 49.
Yeah, it, as opposed to past years when you had to spend a pick in the late 20s, early 30s on him, this is a significant discount, and it's one that definitely makes it enticing to take him. Again, you mentioned earlier, we don't know how much passing they're going to do this year, so I personally think if that's going to be the case and their defense is going to be better, that back to the tournament. I think Thielen's a better tournament play than a season long, because if the targets go down, Thielen is going to be on the low end with Jefferson, and there could be some really lean weeks. And even last year there were weeks where you'll see this, that he had just a couple of catches. Finding the end zone saved him in a few of those games, but we can't bank on touchdowns, so that gets a little bit nerve-wracking. Next player we'll talk about. Last year, a lot of people wanted to see Irv Smith break out, and then Kyle Rudolph goes down in about week 12, and it looks like Smith has a clear path to play. And who out-snaps him? Who out-targets him? Tyler Conklin. Now, Smith had the big game against New Orleans when they were in comeback mode. But other than that, Conklin was a producer, and Smith didn't get the chance to blow up that we hoped for. What are your thoughts about Irv Smith this year?
I do have concerns about Irv Smith because, you know, you mentioned it, Kyle Rudolph goes down. The expectation is Irv Smith blows up. And instead, they insert this guy, Tyler Conklin, who's more or less been a career number three tight end, a blocking tight end. What that tells me is they're going to continue employing two tight ends. And that's not going to change just because Kyle Rudolph isn't there. We are expecting, and I'm seeing Irv Smith aggressively being drafted, which is all fine and good. I don't know how much I love it in this offense because of the lack of volume in certain weeks, like we keep mentioning, that he could see.
You're absolutely correct. And, you know, we talked earlier about the heavy personnel they use. They're, you know, 10th in the league in 12 personnel, third in the league in 21 personnel, but 10 to 12 personnel is what we really focus on because that's the two tight end package. And so, yeah, he's going to be on the field. You're absolutely correct. And it was very distressing, again, to see Conklin get all those targets, and he was productive with them. So people are drafting Irv Smith a little bit aggressively as a borderline tight end one. I'm not in on that. I am out on that. Matter of fact, if I'm in a two tight end league, I need like the 23rd, 24th tight end. I might reach for Conklin as a 24th tight end over Irv Smith as a borderline tight end one.
Yeah, from weeks 14 to 17, Tyler Conklin had at least four targets, at least three receptions, and at least 31 yards. Not monster weeks. He had the week 15 against Chicago where he popped for 14.7 points because he did get into the end zone. But the fact that he is, you know, in that time span running 25 routes a game, he's on the field. He's running routes. In fact, from weeks 13 to 17, he was running 25 routes a game.
Exactly correct. So be careful on draft day. Don't go in with the mindset that Irv Smith is just ready to pop. We probably could have seen that last year. Now, he still can, but be very leery on draft day as to whether you take him. Well, let's do one more.
We're waiting for Jim to come back. We are going to do one more team. Oh, no, you're back.
That was quick this time, fortunately. But yes, after Julio Jones tells Shannon Sharp, I'm out of here. So it sounds like it's probably a done deal of sorts that he is going, because the Falcons need to clear $7.5 million, I believe, of salary cap to sign their rookies. And they have two ways of getting there. One is extending Grady Jackson and restructuring him. And apparently the Falcons have not gone to Grady Jackson to talk about that yet. And June 1st is a handful of days away. The other way is to get rid of Julio Jones. That seems very likely. I almost want to conduct this team preview as if Julio Jones is gone. What do you think, Anthony?
Yeah, I would say, you know, Julio Jones, they say, well, he didn't know he was on air. I believe he knew he was on air. And even if he wasn't, it sounds like Julio is all but out of Atlanta. He's being linked to, San Francisco is the obvious one with Kyle Shanahan. There's rumors that he said he wants to go to New England. Bleacher Report's putting pictures of him in a Cowboys uniform. I'm a Cowboys fan. I love Julio Jones, but we need more help than that. Go get me a safety instead. But yeah, Julio Jones is on his way out. It's a matter of where Julio Jones plays.
You know, one of our loyal listeners, I don't know if we can say names on here or not, so I'll just let that go right now, but I'll just say our loyal listeners had wanted to know about Julio and New England. So we'll send in a second here. I think the reason Julio could be connected there is, remember, they were in the same division, Cam Newton and Julio Jones, for all those years between Carolina and Atlanta. They played twice a year. There's a chance that they became good friends, you know, playing twice a year, have a mutual respect for one another. You know, they probably, I remember from my baseball playing days, you know, you talk to opponents you know, you're familiar with. You get to know them a little bit after games. You chat it up. Well, they were together for years. So it's possible that Julio Jones has a great respect for Cam, and they could have had discussions like Cam saying, you know, man, I have terrible receivers here. If I had you, I would throw you the ball all day. And, you know, they may have had some connection like that. That could be the connection, is the why Julio apparently said he wants to play with Newton. I could be wrong. Certainly a narrative, but I could see those two playing together and Cam just throwing it up, because let's face it, Matt Ryan was not a guy to just throw it up to Julio. Those were route running plays. The ball was thrown into a regular wide receiver. Julio didn't score these touchdowns, Anthony, because he wasn't given that opportunity. General thoughts about Julio.
I like Julio Jones a lot, and you mentioned the Cam Newton factor, and if Julio Jones wants to play with Cam Newton, what it tells me is maybe he has some inside information that Cam does have something left, even though fantasy Twitter seems to think Cam is done.
You're absolutely right. I'm laughing. I find that funny. He may have something left, and really with Julio, like I said, the fact Ryan didn't just throw it up to him, well, Cam Newton can throw it up to him. We may not get precision strikes from him, but Julio doesn't necessarily need that. He never needed it, but that's what Ryan gave him. It's not a bad thing. But Julio can either out-finesse you, outrun you, go up and over you. Julio is a massive, you know, athlete, and there are none better, in my opinion, if you give him that chance. And he hasn't had that chance.
And I believe Julio Jones has a chip on his shoulder.
Absolutely agree with that. I think without saying just I agree with you and move on, because we got to cover the Falcons and I got us off track. So I want to start with Mike Davis, the running attack here. Now, the Falcons were graded out by Sports Info Solution 5th percentile, like one of the bottom barrel offensive lines. And I know they have former first round players and they've spent a lot of draft capital. But as of yet, they have not materialized in anything. I understand that Arthur Smith is the coach. This isn't the Derrick Henry Tennessee Titans. What are you expecting from Mike Davis as the running back for the Atlanta Falcons here?
Listen, I like Mike Davis. I think he's a solid piece. He wasn't Christian McCaffrey whatsoever, but he outperformed everything that I thought he was going to do last season with the Carolina Panthers. I'm not going to put too much stock in his quads getting bigger. I know fantasy Twitter loves to see big quads, and all of a sudden they're the best running back in the NFL. But Mike Davis, he's versatile. They use him in the, you can use him in the passing game. He can run in between the tackles. I mean, last year, I couldn't believe it. Mike Davis in 14 games was fifth in targets. That doesn't really make, you know, when you see it, it's like, oh, I couldn't believe it. So we know he can do a lot of things. Number 10 in red zone touches. So I'm in on Mike Davis. I'm not going to expect Derrick Henry production. I think that would be foolish. But the fact that Atlanta did not add a running back of note in the draft or in free agency outside of Mike Davis, I think they're comfortable using him. Now, are there a few guys lingering on waivers? Could there be guys facing post-June 1 cuts and Atlanta is waiting to see who falls to them? Possibly, but as of now, Mike Davis is the guy, and I don't mind having him on my fantasy team.
So, great comments. What I saw from Mike Davis is what, in a way, has been a microcosm of his career. Mike Davis has always been good in small doses. You are correct. He can run a little inside. He can block a little. He can catch the ball a little bit. But there is nothing special about his game. And what we see is the more work he gets, he wears down. We saw it last year. He started to wear down. And then he did have like a resurgence game at the end. But this is very indicative of an ordinary back. Now, you're right. There's not a lot of competition on the depth chart. But the player I would like fantasy managers to keep an eye on, undrafted free agent, Javian Hawkins. Look, how many teams want to give their running back a 90% workload? Very, very few do. He has the profile to be a very good receiver. A lot of people didn't see him as an undrafted free agent type. They saw him as a player who should have been drafted. There are some respected analysts that have him as the number one UDFA. I think there's a great chance that Hawkins gets a chance in the receiving game. And if he plays to his athleticism, that could take Mike Davis out of some opportunities in the passing game. Now, obviously, Davis is good in pass pro, and that's part of the discussion here. His ability to protect is going to keep him on the field some. But I just don't see him holding up long term. And I think you've heard me say this before, Anthony. If you draft Mike Davis and you get 3 good weeks out of him, sell. He is always going to wear down. He is an ordinary replacement-level running back that does some things. If you sell him and get a good return on him, I believe that's the best use.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And Mike Davis, he's the type of player who can really give you 2 or 3 big weeks. And right, pull the trigger there, because as I'm looking at his season breakdown, he finishes the year back-to-back games in the single digits. And in the fantasy playoffs, he can ultimately lose you the whole thing.
Yes. So I really would like fantasy managers to consider that advice. If you're going to select him in leagues, just consider that. Now, Matt Ryan. So if he's without Julio Jones, we know he can produce because we've seen him at least last year, a few games without him. Now, Matt Ryan is not a high-end quarterback one anymore. We know he's more of a borderline quarterback one. We get that. No rushing production. The passing can be very erratic. He has those games where he disappears from time to time. But he still has, obviously, Calvin Ridley. He has the rookie Kyle Pitts, and we'll talk about him in a minute. Without Julio, though, and really with very shaky running back play as a potential, what do you expect from Matt Ryan for fantasy this year?
I'm worried if Matt Ryan doesn't have Julio Jones, the trend is Matt Ryan doesn't produce up to what we expect Matt Ryan to do, even though he has weapons and Calvin Ridley and Hayden Hurst, now Kyle Pitts. I don't know what Matt Ryan is without Julio. And from what we've seen, he's very pedestrian. Sure, things can change, but that's what I'm worried about. Now, we do have the new offensive coordinator in Arthur Smith. Maybe he helps out Matt Ryan. I've heard Smith comped out slightly to Kyle Shanahan, and we know Matt Ryan played his best football with Kyle Shanahan. But the fact that Julio Jones might not be there, I don't know how much stock in redraft I'm going to have in Matt Ryan. He's another one of those tournament play guys where I'll grab the Falcon stack. But in redraft, there's other quarterbacks I'd rather have.
As you mentioned that, and I want to take part of yours and move forward with it, a lot of people are going to see that Arthur Smith is the head coach. They're going to see that Ryan Tannehill completely revolutionize his career. Now, the thing that made Tannehill super effective, Arthur Smith had Derrick Henry. They used play action super effectively. They would run plays where they would either have a receiver wide open, a tight end wide open. They used pre-snap motion. They used play action. And they had the threat of Derrick Henry. And they were surgical. Arthur Smith, I think there is 0% chance he runs anything close to the same offense here. I believe he saw what he had. He was a creative mind, and he came up with that. Here, bad offensive line. Again, questionable running back play. And somewhat immobile quarterback. He has a little bit of pocket shiftiness. We get that. I honestly don't know what Arthur Smith tries to do here. Because realistically, if Julio's gone, you got Russell Gage, Olamide Zaccheaus, who I like. We'll talk about him in a second. I don't know personnel-wise. They can't put three receivers on the field regularly. They don't have the players for that, I don't believe, to be successful. They may have to, by default, put two tight ends on the field. They may have to put Hayden Hurst and Kyle Pitts out there. Because, A, it's an extra body to protect Ryan. B, they may use some play-action elements, not because it's what they did in Tennessee, but it's because the only chance they've got. So that said, let's talk about other receivers. Ridley, we know. Ridley, and let's just, where do you have Ridley roughly ranked as your, on your wide receiver ranks right now?
He's a top 15 receiver for me. And I think that bumps up a little bit if Julio Jones, in fact, is gone.
Yeah, and I haven't, I moved him up to roughly like wide receiver 8. I moved him way up there because I think the target volume is going to have to be high because we're still looking at a bad defense. So I'm with you on that for sure.
Now, this is you assuming Julio is out, right?
Yes, assuming, right. When I said, yeah, once the kind of the news broke that Julio said he was out, yes, I moved him way up. But I'm with you otherwise. If Julio's there, I'm closer, you know, to 12, 13, maybe even the 15 area right. You're talking about. But the assumption is he's going to get so many targets that it's just going to be one of those volume-based things. And Ryan is good enough to get him the ball. I think if Julio is gone, fantasy managers need to consider Olamide Zaccheaus. Last year, the coaching staff said he was the direct one-for-one replacement. Christian Blake was the replacement for Ridley, and Zaccheaus was the replacement for Jones. Now, Zaccheaus had a couple of pop moments early, and then he got hurt. And so he fell off, and people are just kind of thinking, oh, he had a flash in the pan, and he's not very good. But overall, he can be a very reliable number two in that role with Ridley drawing the extra coverage. And I think you could get him super, super late in drafts. So I think taking a flyer on Zaccheaus is not a bad idea. Any thoughts, Anthony?
Yeah, I like Zaccheaus. He gave us two or three really big games. I remember the big one against Green Bay back in week 4. Then he pops in week 9 against Denver for 20 points. Then the injury happens. My thing here is, what about Gage? Because Gage seems like the player, if you read all the cookie cutter fantasy articles, he's the sleeper of drafts, but I don't know how much I trust Gage, especially now with Cordarrelle Patterson on that team. Does Cordarrelle Patterson now take over in that slot role, in that Gage role, or is Cordarrelle Patterson going to be the running back?
I love that. Anthony, you bring up a great point. If Arthur Smith believes in analytics, which he does, and he uses pre-snap motion, who better to use on pre-snap motion than Cordarrelle Patterson, right? Jet sweep, you know, just using him as a decoy. He doesn't have to be any more than the fast dude he is with a couple screens and jet sweeps to get him in space. He's not going to be a great player, but he fits the type of chess piece that an Arthur Smith wants in an offense that's going to, again, use pre-snap motion. I like that idea. Now, the problem I have with Russell Gage is going to be this. The Falcons were primarily 11 personnel under the old coaching regime, which means he was on the field regularly. I believe if Julio's gone, as I said earlier, they have to play 12. They've got to put Pitts and Hurst on the field because they can't really go down the rabbit hole of Ridley, Zaccheaus, and Gage. That's not an imposing trio. Right. So I think if they go 12, the slot guy's the man out. It's going to be Zaccheaus because you don't put your slot guy on the field in 12. You put your two outside receivers. And so I think that's my concern with Gage.
You know, you keep bringing up personnel, and if you look at that tight end depth chart, Hayden Hurst and Kyle Pitts, they're not blocking tight ends, but what they did bring in, and this is probably to replace Luke Stocker, Lee Smith, who at one time was known as the best blocking tight end in the league. Are we poised to see three tight end, 13 personnel?
You certainly can. And they even brought Jaden Graham in. And, you know, they've had Jaden Graham. Yes. Jaden Graham can play a little bit. And not that, so they do have, right now they have seven tight ends on the depth chart. So if you want to read tea leaves, yes, 12 personnel for sure. And as you said, they may run a significant number of 13. Absolutely correct. And that would allow max protect. It would allow play action and opportunities with light secondaries. So I absolutely think that's a great call. Last thing we're going to cover today. If Julio's gone, where do you place Kyle Pitts in your tight end rankings?
Oh, this is the question, right? Because I think you like to bring up outliers, and it's hard to bet on outliers, right? And we know the transition from college to pro tight end, it's not always smooth, but Kyle Pitts is also advertised. Well, he could be a wide receiver too. I don't know. I right now I am aggressive with Kyle Pitts, more so in best ball tournaments. I have him as my 10 and 5 right now. Is that, am I crazy?
He's being drafted as high as tight end 4 by people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the limit, because I don't know that anybody's going to put him ahead of Kittle, Waller, and Kelsey. Right. So that's probably about where he's going to go. And I have to think if Julio's gone. I was much lower on Kyle Pitts with Julio in the picture. But the targets, they're going to throw a lot. They're going to trail. And that has to be a bump in target for Pitts with Julio Jones gone. I mean, 80 targets? That'd be a fair number for a tight end. And if he gets 80 targets, it's really tough to call right now. And I'm glad you brought up what I kept saying about the outliers. I don't like betting on outliers. But it's a team that's going to pass an awful lot. And if they detach him from the formation, he would become more of a slot receiver, which really would be another knock on Russell Gage. If they use him in that capacity, there is upside there. I'm probably not drafting Kyle Pitts. I'm probably not, because somebody's going to have him two or three players in the league I'm in will have him way higher than I will and will jump on him early, and I won't have to make that decision. So I'm fine with that, because I don't see myself taking a tight end until the sixth or the seventh round. He's long gone. So that's probably good for me. Let somebody else take the risk. So, but I understand why somebody, like you said, you see the upside. Play him in tournaments, because if he has that season, he's on your team.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned 80 targets. Last year, in first year in that offense, Hayden Hurst in 16 games saw 87 targets. And then if we're going to factor in if Julio Jones is gone, I mean, even in 9 games last year, Julio Jones had 68 targets, right around 7.6 targets per game. We know that he's a monster volume player. So could that all go to Kyle Pitts? I doubt it. But 80 to 90 targets for this young rookie, I wouldn't put it past him.
No, absolutely not. So, man, this is going to be interesting to see. But again, if you want Kyle Pitts on your team, I don't think you're going to be able to get him after the fifth round. I think somebody's going to take him by that point. So fantasy players need to make a firm stance in saying, this is where I am on him. And you'll know based on where you stand him, you're in or you're out, because you know when he's going to go. And if you've got the stones to take him in the fifth round, God bless you. And it may work out. Anthony, we're going to call this a day. What do you got going on here this upcoming week?
We'll be back tomorrow, most likely covering wide receiver rankings with Mike Hoff. I know next week Mike's going to be off from work, and we're going to be doing a lot with the Hayden Hurst Mental Health Podathon.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that Podathon too. Yeah, it's, and you guys do phenomenal work. Matter of fact, you guys were shouted out on the Audible from Football Guys today.
Oh,
they had a guest on there, and I can't remember his name. I'm sorry, somebody I didn't know, but he specifically, Sigmund Bloom asked him about who's making a difference in the industry, and he mentioned both you guys, Anthony Servino and Michael Hoff, by
name.
That's
amazing.
And he mentioned Hayden Hurst, and he mentioned that. So I thought that was an amazing shout out. So you guys well deserve. You are doing wonderful things. And I think sometimes you need to hear that. You are making a difference. You are super important in this fantasy community, not just for your football acumen, but for yourself as a human being. That is so important to understand it. So, hey, you know what, dude? I shouldn't say it's another man, but I'm proud of you. I seriously am proud of you and Michael.
I appreciate that. We both appreciate that.
Yes, you guys deserve it. And so keep doing what you're doing there. In terms of me, you know, I do a lot of short little videos from the car when I'm picking up my daughter from school. Now, school is almost over for her, but on Twitter, at Jim Coventry NFL, I do these short 7 to 10 minute videos, talk about fantasy commodity of the day, something like this. I'll probably be doing those, you know, for a while. So if you want to see those, look me up there. For Anthony Servino, I'm Jim Coventry. Thank you for your time and have a wonderful rest of the day.